then of course the instructor is called trainer. That's the exact Tibetan term. It is called labasum. That means three trainings. Okay, so the first training is ethics. Ethics, foundation practices. So ethics here meaning non-harming. So if we could not benefit others but not harming others, that would be the foundation ethics. Not stealing from Western, what do you call hippo? What is the doctor's?
Hypocritical.
Yeah, so not exactly stealing, but Buddhist has been mentioning this for a long time. So if we could not help others but not to harm them, that's the basic. Now, ethics also includes cultivation of wholesome deeds or restraining from unwholesome deeds, and especially cultivation of loving kindness, compassion, empathy, all are part of the ethics. So there's a general Buddhist ethics and precepts for monastic and lay people. And these precepts and ethics, from my understanding, is the essential practice of whole teaching. It's not a separate teaching or separate practice. Actually, if you study ethics, Buddhist ethics, they are really summary of all the teachings. I later on understood, and I did not understand that way in the past. So it's a what is called code, practice codes. Ethics are practice codes. The second is the training of meditation, especially the training of shamatha meditation. The second one, shamatha, means, well, in the West it is translated as calm abiding, and that's the direct translation of the Tibetan term called shine. So shi actually means pacification, and ne means abiding. So in this context, what it really means is pacifying destructive thoughts and emotion, or reducing destructive thoughts or afflictive thoughts, emotion, and then able to abide the state of the reduction or the cessation. So if we do that, then it's called shine. But shine also includes concentration or single-pointed. So you are able to focus on one object. Initially, return to that object again, but then gradually you are able to stay with the object as long as you want, actually, once you reach to the advanced level. Then the third training is called a training of wisdom. Now, wisdom in this context means training on realizing the truth or the realities. So it is also a synonym of vipassana. So basically, now we have three trainings: ethics, trainings on ethics, trainings on shamatha or calm abiding, and trainings on cultivation of wisdom or vipassana. So, then the question is, why do we, well, first of all the meditations, all the Buddhist meditation, classical meditations can be summarized into shamatha and vipassana. Shamatha is concentrative or calm abiding, and vipassana is insight meditation. That's good translation, insight meditation. So the question is, why do we need at least these two meditation practices? And the answer for that is actually quite simple. It has to do one as immediate intervention or solution to overcome whatever the stress and the suffering and pain or emotions we experience. The other one is designed for long-term intervention. So that means the first one is the immediate intervention, immediate antidote, and the second one is antidote that actually changes the root cause of the suffering. So we have two levels or two dimensions. One, take care of the immediate stressor or stress. And then if you use only shamatha, relaxation or calm abiding throughout your life, then you are only dealing with the superficial level of the suffering, so that also causes to go through the cycle, maybe endless cycles. So it's almost like one depends on some kind of drug that brings immediate kind of elation or relaxation or some kind of relief or freedom. But then if someone takes that particular drug, then it creates more addiction, and then it prevents from finding the long-term solution. Okay? So in order to, let's say for the anger, so in order to reduce the anger, just reduce the anger, then we need shamatha meditation practice, just to reduce the grosser level of stress or anger. And then vipassana meditation, we need it in order to overcome and change the root cause. Okay? So root cause meaning, for example, grasping on our thoughts and emotions, whatever we are grasping and clinging on. So for that, then we need vipassana. Okay? Now, so this is what is taught in Buddhist classical teachings. Now, then the question is, why do you need to do this particular practice, especially mindfulness or self-compassion? Now, first of all, the theory behind all of this teaching, Buddhist teaching, has to do what is affecting our suffering or dukkha. Okay? And the answer for that is that our sufferings, physical sufferings, emotional, mental sufferings, are triggered or caused by our reactions. And because of reaction, then we go through the cycle again, 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 again. And so sometimes we may become very, very familiar with our own reactions, and so may feel comfortable and remain in this cycle for a long time. Then the next question is, what is reactions? So reaction means automatic pilot mode of jumping onto or into whatever experience we have. So reaction doesn't have any awareness. And so it's a very, very habitual pattern that we have formed many times in our life. So it becomes kind of automatic. We may not even realize. And so now, what are the examples of those reactions? One example of reaction is grasping. It's also called attachment or cravings. So if we have tendencies to cling on something, especially something destructive or negative, that will definitely increase and remain in the cycle. Okay. Now, positive things, maybe we can grasp or cling on temporarily, but as you increase your knowledge and skills experience, then you will also learn equally the grasping on some positive things are also obstacle for the personal transformations. And you may reach to the third level where you may able to see things as it is without level of positives and negatives. That will be advanced level of meditation practice. Okay? Now, the other example of reaction is aversion. It is also called anger or hatred, other translations. But aversion is a good translation. And aversion here meaning something happens and we tend to push away or resist or deny or escape or avoid. So all of these are same as aversion. And so more we are caught in this aversion, we also create this cycle, remaining in same cycle. Because avoiding helps temporarily, but it does not actually touch the root cause or the deeper source of our suffering. So we may just go through again and again. Okay? So now, therefore, the theory is that our suffering or dukkha, life-related stress, distress, is caused by our own reactions, psychological reaction, emotional reaction, behavior reactions. And that cycle is called samsara in Buddhist teachings. So cyclic existence. And those of you drive towards Mount Rainier, before coming to Mount Rainier, there is exact Buddhist metaphor what samsara look like. There is a hotel, and in front of there is a wheel. The wheel that goes, that is the exact classical metaphor. It goes like this. And then we remain in this. Okay. Now, since that is the suffering and its sources of suffering's theory, Now, the question is, what is happiness? What is relief from suffering? And what are the methods? So that's what we are going to talk. Then we can discuss about mindfulness. So first of all, happiness. Well, first of all, of course, there is a short-term happiness and long-term happiness. And I understand that in the West, for the short-term happiness, it's called a hedonic treadmill. What does that mean?
Well, hedonic means related to pleasure, and treadmill is going around.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. So many of life experience that we have can be more hedonic happiness, temporary pleasure, but can be very intense and can be very, very joyful. And it is same as taking alcohol for the solution of depression, and then it brings relief from the depression temporarily, but then it comes back and then we need more alcohols. So grasping and clinging on temporary pleasures actually may create the same cycle. So therefore, maybe we could appreciate the temporary pleasures in our life, but also look for the enduring happiness or enduring peaceful experiences. So now, nirvana means enduring happiness. Nirvana or enlightenment means enduring happiness, enduring peaceful experience, enduring some positive qualities that is not permanent, but it is like a baseline of person's life. There is a wave of emotions come and experience, and then person has a great resilience to go back to that baseline of enduring happiness. So that is what we are looking for, actually. When you come here, receive teaching, do practice here, and hopefully you are taking that practice into your daily life, and you are each day you are actually cultivating that enduring happiness. If you do that, you are experiencing nirvana each day and each time. Okay? Now, then the question is, what is the method or what is the source of such enduring happiness? That's simple, because the opposite of reaction is non-reaction. That means responding or response. So there is a more space between our perception, our mind, and the event that are happening, or the experience that are happening. So there's awareness. With awareness, then we may have less reactions, more objective perspectives, able to see things as it is, even suffering as suffering. That is the greatest realization. I want to encourage you to experience suffering as suffering and stay with that suffering as long as we can without getting solutions right away. So if we stay there, we may find great realizations. So what I'm saying is, without reaction to our struggles, actually, we may find great solutions. Solutions within it, instead of finding or searching from somewhere else. Now let's talk about mindfulness. Okay. Now, first of all, mindfulness, and this is a teaching for not only new ones but also old ones. Okay. So, traditional Buddhist teaching explains different methods. Sometimes all methods can be summarized into one. Sometimes into two, other times into three, or four, or eight, like eightfold path. Then there's another list called 37 methods to enlightenment. And that is classical Buddhist teaching, especially what Tibetan Buddhism call a general Buddhism. General Buddhism, common Buddhism, refers to Theravadin teachings and practices. And I've been mentioning many times that actually Tibetan Buddhism is somewhat misunderstood in the West and in the East. Because Tibetan Buddhism is viewed as Vajrayana practice, Tantrayana, meaning that it is not Theravadin tradition and also not Bodhisattva practice or traditions. That is really misunderstanding. So all the clear understanding would only know when someone studies and researches, synthesize all the teachings. So the reason why I brought up this is that in Abhidhamma Kosha, which is considered as a Theravadin teaching in terms of four philosophical Buddhist teachings, so inside that, it mentioned 37 methods or paths to nirvana and enlightenment. And mindfulness is actually the first one. That's why I want to mention to you. Among 37, the 37 can include in the first mindfulness practice. But in terms of list, mindfulness practice is the very first one. So in the West, you're getting only the first one and not the 36. But when you practice mindfulness, then it becomes very inclusive that it will include many of the other lists. Okay? Now, in the West, there is a tendency to view mindfulness and vipassana as same teaching. It seems that's what is understood and that is what it is explained by many Buddhist teachers, and especially I would say new vipassana teachers, whatever that means. But in classical Buddhist teachings, mindfulness teaching and vipassana teaching are two different. It is different because vipassana, traditional vipassana teachings are philosophical based teachings. It includes the understanding and a practice of emptiness, selflessness. So it's a very, very philosophical teaching, because vipassana means wisdom or realization of reality. Whereas mindfulness is not only the truth of the reality, but also it includes our body, mind, and emotion. So therefore, classical mindfulness has four categories. So mindfulness of body, mindfulness of thought. So second one is mindfulness of feelings or emotion. And third is mindfulness of thought or mind. And the fourth is called mindfulness of dharma. Now that, the last one, is related to vipassana, but not all mindfulness practices. But I guess it is okay to consider mindfulness and vipassana as same, if it works for the time being, if it is practical for you. Okay. So, right this moment, any question came up. I like reactions, actually. Yes?
You mentioned earlier, or you suggested that we should stay with our suffering.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit more, because I'm specifically this distinction with, does that mean I just stay in my cycle of whirling through my brain, or does that mean I observe my suffering? What is that?
Right. So staying or being with the suffering, meaning that usually we have tendency to do something right away. And that usually brings temporary relief, but it creates more long-term sufferings. So when I say stay, you actually observe, stay with the suffering, but through observation, through observing at this particular suffering. If it is anger, and then you actually experience the whole anger, physical symptoms, psychological or cognitive components, and the emotional components, and the behaviors, all these components. Usually we have anger and then we react on that, we don't notice this. So if we notice all of these, then naturally our mind actually tend to calm down, because now we are observing at these components, what makes anger. But without these components, there is no anger. So, like, we are already suffering for the level of anger. The actual anger is these components that we call anger. So you can apply the same understanding with stress or with depression. So let's say I feel depressed and I'm so caught up with the concept and the term and the level of depression, and I feel depressed and I take medicine or I do something right away, instead of staying with the depression, meaning this time you are actually experiencing all the components of depression with non-judgmental thoughts, with open mind, and kind of looking at without drawn or jumping into that. So that's what I meant by staying. It's a skill. It's a skill that we all need. And I usually jokingly say, if we do that, then from practical point of view, we'll save lots of money. If we save money, probably we don't have to work harder. Then if we don't work harder, then we have more time to reflect on value of life. Yes?
So do you think there's a natural sense of completion then, that we know when we stay with the suffering long enough?
Yes. So, so first of all, let's say I am feeling anger. And so all of us need some kind of personal reminder to take and to create the space. So let's say in a meeting I feel anger, and so this time the way how I create a space is asking myself, what am I experiencing right now? Now asking that question and then looking at what I'm experiencing right now. Now I'm now giving instruction of both how to practice mindfulness and how to apply in daily life. Okay, so if you don't hear separate topics. So that reminds me that if you are looking for a true meditation, Buddhist meditation, then meditation means experiencing whatever is happening at the moment. So that would be the measurement for us, whether we are doing or practicing meditation or not, based on, am I experiencing this whatever event, whatever is happening? Now I would not say, am I experiencing fully? That sounds judgmental. But non-judgmental is to ask, what am I experiencing? And I make the same comment last time during our Thursday practices. Many of the times, our thinking about our experience is actually creating more suffering. So therefore, if you want to practice meditation, if you want to do spiritual practice, from my understanding, is to have more experiential life than intellectual or analytical or thinking life. Okay. Now, so mindfulness has to do experiencing whatever is happening at the present moment. My understanding is experience is free from all dualities. Experience itself is actually free from both positive and negative. The positive and negative thoughts, positive and negative experience are created by our conceptual thoughts. So that doesn't mean that we should eliminate our conceptual thought. What it means is to have both, at least. whenever we need to think, then we use our thinking abilities, but not like all the time. For whatever happens, thinking is always there. So now, if you increase experiencing whatever is happening right now, as it is, as best we can, then you are actually not experiencing the positive nor the negative. You're experiencing whatever it is. So our experience is free from the past and the future. The past and future are created by our conceptual thoughts. So the experiencing is the actual reality, what is happening at the present moment. So therefore, that is another way of explaining, staying with the suffering and staying with the happiness, not to forget. Because staying with happiness is as important as staying with suffering. Because if we stay long enough with the happiness, we will gain the insight. The happiness and pleasure actually do not last long as we wish or as we expected. So pretty soon, as your meditation progresses, you will become very, very objective. And that is what we're looking for. Objective. But it is a subjective objective. You become subjective objective. So subjective objective are not two dichotomy that is viewed in many academic settings. I've seen this slideshows presented by Richard Davidson. This has to do now what is called first-person based research. And I want to share you a little bit how our mind, subjective mind, also becomes very, very objective. So there's one research result which shows through the fMRI that the trained person's accuracy is very, very close to third-person-based research. Third-person-based research is the regular Western research observed by third person. But the first person is actually the person who is doing practice is able to respond almost same as what you see the brain function through fMRI. Maybe I will share with you sometime, and I'm so amazed by that. Okay, all right. So now, meditation in general, mindfulness in particular, means having this subjective-objective mind or experiential mind that is free from conceptual thoughts, at least at the moment. So if you experience moment of experience that is free from stresses, the positive things or negative things, if you have this state of cessation, then that is called nirvana. Okay. So now, let me mention to you how to cultivate mindfulness. Now, so this instruction is how I usually give during our Thursday meditation practices. First of all, it is really, really important to have stable physical posture. That is the foundation practice. Everything is not mind. If that's the case, then there are many Tibetan meditators who actually suffer many physical illness. Even their mental state is highly functional. Not all the time, relatively. So there are many, many professional meditators' instruction. We could call it secret instructions. And many of the instructions says, once you have this conducive physical posture, then it automatically brings the relaxation. It actually helps to move all our physical energies or chemicals or oxygens or whatever is going through in our body that affects our mind and consciousness will be also stable or stabilized by having just this physical postures. So once you have that, then usually for the training purpose, we need one object. And one object can be breathing, can be sensation of the breathing, or it can be some object that is neutral and also stable. And that object, once you chose, actually needs to continue with it. Otherwise, changing your object of meditation, too much changing will create lots of instability. It's almost like a person is very anxious and could not actually focus on one object and keep on jumping to many places. So that will not be effective. So therefore, for the training purpose at the beginning, it is important to have an object that mind can focus on. Now the question is, what about concentration? Concentration is important because without concentration, then there will not be awareness. Awareness really comes through concentration and through experiencing whatever is happening. Okay. So if I do not have a concentration on one object, well, that goes back to, I'm sure, our own daily life experience. So when you do meditation, when you focus on one object, that is same as saying staying with that object. So if you stay mind with that one object, then naturally it goes deepest level of our consciousness. That's why when we focus on breathing or one object, we experience more thoughts, more emotions. It's almost like these thoughts and emotions come up because they're there most of the time, but we are occupied by work or occupied by something else. And so usually we could not access them. So that's why in mindfulness, you focus on one object and it naturally brings the awareness of all the thoughts, all the emotions and sensations. So what it means is it is working instead of I came here to do meditation, quiet myself. Maybe quieting can be next time experience. But if you try to quiet your mind, most of the time it may not work because mind is designed to think. So we are against the nature. So instead, we actually become friend. We actually engage with the thoughts and feelings, emotions. And I usually say that you might be paying $60, $70, $80 to a therapist, psychologist to experience these issues that are kind of buried under the daily life activities. So when you do meditation, this type, again, I'm not sure you want to hear again, you will save $60 by doing self-therapy, not a second or third person. Okay? Then the question is, now what to do if we experience thoughts, emotions, issues come up? Now, the another method called attitudes. Attitude is really crucial, indispensable method that we must have. So attitude here means the way how we pay attention, the way how we focus on our object. So from a mindfulness practice, of course, you practice with the open mind. With the sense of curiosities. And also able to observe through non-judgmental stance. That means if I breathe fast and I'm able to notice, yes, I breathe fast at the moment. Instead of breathing fast might lead to anxiety attack. That is thought. That is conceptual thought that increases the anxiety. Okay? What else? Now I need to talk self-compassion. So self-compassion is also part of the attitude, and mindfulness, self-compassion are actually closely connected. So once you have a mindfulness, then you have self-compassion already. So that's why I usually don't focus too much on the self-compassion. But let me share you some. So first of all, self-compassion is not a new teaching in Buddhist teaching and practices. But it is a new concept in Western psychology that is called self-compassion. So from a self-compassion point of view, or at least author's definition of self-compassion, is establishing healthier attitude or perspective towards self. Now, that is not different from practice of mindfulness. So when you practice mindfulness, you're also establishing this healthier relationship with our own thoughts, with our own perceptions, feelings, and sensations. So, First of all, cultivation of compassion. Now, compassion is also one teaching that encompasses the whole teaching according to Mahayana and Bodhisattva. There's a dialogue between historical Buddha and one of his students, particularly Bodhisattva. And so this Bodhisattva asks to historical Buddha, if there is one path that will encompass all the paths, what is that path? And then historical Buddha's response is, compassion is one path, and compassion is the only path, actually, since it encompasses all the practices. And the metaphor is, it is on our palm. So if we have something in our palm, then we see it, everything. It's within our reach, with us. So now, let me explain a little bit what it means. So first of all, compassion in Buddhist teaching is defined as mental state that aspires all living beings, including oneself, to be free from all types of suffering and the sources of suffering. Now, that is the definition, classical definition. Now, actually, that includes everything. Because if you are freeing suffering, then it naturally brings the happiness. If you are freeing from the source of suffering, that also brings happiness. So therefore, compassion actually includes all the methods and also includes all the aspirational results. So therefore, actually, compassion is considered as the most important path. Now let me share you some of the Western psychological perspectives. Now before I share that, cultivating compassion and loving kindness, in reality, that is a true relationship. Our secular worldly relationships are looking for the compassion, loving kindness, and empathy and understanding. So those are the basis of our own. Now, these are not just thought, but these also include some actions. So thought, actions, okay? Now in Western psychology, it has a similar message. I was quite surprised. So there are many research. What is the effective factors of therapy? If you are a therapist or if you have received therapy, it says, the research says, actually, not the psychological techniques very much, but the relationship between the therapist and the client really heals whatever the presenting problem is. Now, relationship in this context means therapist having compassion or having empathy, active listening or effective listening, or client feels being heard or listened, being acknowledged, being accepted. So that's what in Mahayana Buddhism it says, compassion is the root of all paths. So same as in your regular relationship, what really strengthens relationship is these inside qualities or love, compassion, empathy, genuineness, or understanding. And that's how it actually helps others. In all healing profession, it seems we need these internal qualities. By the way, I read New York article, and if you have read it, there's a latest article on mindfulness, how mindfulness helps for medical practitioners preventing from burnout experiences. And so in this article, it says this nurse is kind of distracted by colleague doing something, and the patient is in front of there, and the patient says, "I'm here. I'm here." And make that comment to this nurse, it really brought up this, well, of course, people are trained early on, then they continue and become kind of busy and lots of chores and responsibilities, and sometimes then it goes away. So anyhow, you can go to New York Times and there's a recent article you can read. I want to share one more about the awareness once more. So last week I was looking for perspectives on gratitude from Western perspectives, and so I went to American Psychological Association website, and I looked for what it says. And then basically it shares one example, and then that actually helps me to understand the importance of awareness in our life. So there's a person who was not able to see things until age 12. But then this person received some latest eye surgery and able to see things. So this person feels this great appreciation and gratitude, able to see things which are not seen for a long time, at least for 12 years. So this person was very, very appreciative and not taking for granted. So when we do not have this gratitude, meaning sense of thankfulness and sense of happiness with whatever is happening. And so after a while, the same person actually just lost the gratitude, this excitement, how great it is. So it seems that it happens frequently in our life. Maybe we celebrate our 25th, and at the moment we have gratitude, appreciation, but then we go back to our normal life, and next day, next week, next month, then there's no much sense of gratitude and appreciation, so rejoicing. So here's my thought that I want to share with you, is increasing awareness and mindfulness actually might help us to maintain those gratitudes. Because out of awareness, then we may be able to experience and notice when positive things are happening. So if there is no awareness, then many positive things may happen in front of us, then we're not able to appreciate. We lose the gratitude or rejoicing, appreciation. So that's one of the reasons why I see it is really important to have this awareness. Now, you may wonder what awareness is. So awareness simply means knowing what is happening. That is very simple. Knowing what is happening, not like what happened in the past or what happened in the future. Awareness simply means what is happening right now in the moment. Okay? So with that awareness, we may actually maintain lots of positive qualities within us. With awareness, we may see more positive qualities with others. Now, if I go back to the self-compassion, self-compassion basically meaning having or taking care of ourselves, taking care of our thoughts. So when we have non-judgmental perspectives towards ourselves, that is self-compassion. Instead of having self-critical thoughts or judgmental thoughts, then we are not experiencing self-compassion. Okay? Now, self-compassion also means if we are experiencing certain emotions, again, we are able to actually process that emotion as it is, without judgments. And if judgment thoughts come up, then able to see those judgmental thoughts as judgmental thoughts. Now, self-compassion also means to engage with activities that will actually bring more beneficial results to ourselves, and that could be walking. Now, I have new terms for walking since my primary exercise is walking. I could not do others I wish to do. So I want to share you my new terms, kind of adopted from others. Have you heard the term called, I think, now I'm forgetting, gut brain? No. Have you heard that? Gut brain? Did you hear that? Nutritionist talking, gut brain? Did you hear that?
Oh, yes. Gut.
Gut. Yes, gut.
Gut brain. Mm.
So nutritionists call this gut brain. So their understanding is however we do with this gut that really affects our whole body. So actual brain is here. Not here. So my new term is feed brain. Our brain is not here, not here, but the feet. So however you move your feet affects the whole body. So therefore brain is down there, not here. It's not a real concept, but just to encourage you to move a body as much as you can. All right. So any question what I share, any concerns? Yes.
This may be very simple, I'm not sure, but you talked about when you have a negative thought or if you're suffering, to go with it. Stay with it, stay in the moment with it.
Yes.
Okay, that's one thing.
All right.
And then at the other end, you talked about having compassion. What happens in between?
Oh, so actually staying with the negative thoughts and negative emotion, if you stay mindfully, then it is self-compassion.
Oh, okay.
Because if I feel anger or frustration, usually I get stuck the concept of the frustration and the stress and the anger. And there is a less emphasis on the deconstruction or finding the real anger and the real frustration. So that's really what mindfulness is. So within the anger, if we become mindfulness of the body, physiological symptoms, when we feel anger, now you become mindfulness of body. Then we feel anger and we become mindfulness of what thought we have, how we view ourselves when we feel angry, or how we view, perceive others. So we become aware that particular thought. And then sometimes when we feel anger, we might be feeling sad or mad. And so then we become mindfulness of that. So once we know, then it naturally actually dissipates the anger itself. Because then we gain some insight, some objective information that actually anger itself does not exist. What exists is these components that makes anger. So if we see that, now we become more compassionate towards ourselves. So there is more acceptance, there is more experiencing what is happening. There is a more realistic mind after all. So this realistic, holistic perspective, rather just one narrow-minded on this particular emotions or thought.
So somehow or other the compassion and wisdom are tied together.
Yes. Oh. Yes, it tied together when it reached to more intermediate and advanced level. At the initial level, they are separate. So that's why actually we have what I call I call it insightful compassion. And that insightful compassion is already integration of both wisdom and compassion. So there's a feeling of compassion, but at the same time there's an insight. So I feel compassion towards this person, but if I do this, then this would happen. Or if I compassion actually. Insightful compassion, meaning there's a both understanding of the impermanence of the situation, as well as there's a feeling of compassion towards oneself and towards others. So wisdom meaning understanding of impermanence of oneself and others. So that is That is, or the wisdom meaning interdependence of oneself and other, rather compassionately doing many things and make the other person dependent. That would be lack of insight or lack of wisdom. Mm-hmm. So having both. Now, insightful compassion also means knowing when to express compassion. That also means insightful compassion. So knowing when to experience the compassion and express the compassion, and knowing when to act with compassion. So that knowing part with the compassion is insightful compassion. Okay, now I'm noticing heat. Do you notice the heat?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So, seems it's quite universal, right? Okay.
Brains.
Any other? Yes.
Brains are heating.
Yes. And any other clarification questions? Yes.
Just out of curiosity, so when I look at, it says,
yes.
And you said in Tibetan, Shamatha is
Shine. Yes.
So, what's Vipassana?
Vipassana is insightful meditation.
In Tibetan.
Or inside Hladong. Hladong is a very good translation of Vipassana.
Okay.
These days, many Tibetan traditional textbooks are now translated into Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm.
Tibetan textbooks are initially translated from the Sanskrit. And so the modern translators actually see Tibetan translation very, very accurate, because
okay.
Tibetan translations were done by both the Indian scholar and practitioner and Tibetan scholar and practitioner. So almost all the translation at the end, there's acknowledgement of Tibetan scholar, translator, and Indian translator, scholar. So going back to your question, in Tibetan it's called Hlaktong. Hlaktong. Can you say, like all of you, say Hlaktong. Hlaktong. Yeah, Hlak means unique, special, and Tong means to see. Like in English, you say, I see, meaning I understand. The same as in Tibetan. Tong meaning also understand. So, now in the West, it is translated as special insight. Special insight meditation or insight meditation.
The reason I ask is that we've taken to picking up some Buddhist magazines,
mm-hmm.
or magazines that are supposed to be about Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
and it can really get confusing.
Yes.
So many different this offering here, that there, that like that.
Right.
And I've seen insight meditation, and so I was just but I haven't seen the Tibetan version.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like someone saying Shine group or
right.
Shine retreat,
right?
Or the
yeah.
Tibetan word
yes.
for I haven't seen that.
Yes.
So I just was curious.
Yes. Yes. There's a less, maybe in Boulder, Colorado, you may hear more Shine. I'm It's true. You you hear more shine in Boulder.
but the other word.
Hakdong. 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 Not very much. Not very much. Yeah. Okay. So in summarize. So. What have you learned from this? If you just throw, what you have learned from this?
More mindfulness.
More mindfulness? Okay. What else?
Spend less money, meditate more.
Not to react to your, when you're suffering.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Awareness in the body.
Awareness in the body.
Like there's a very short interval between dukkha and nirvana, you know, suffering and wisdom. You know, it's like all you have to do is stay with the one and you get the other.
Yes. 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 So that means nirvana or heaven is not after the death of ourself. So actually, samsara and nirvana are together. Nirvana only comes from samsara, not eliminate samsara. So eliminate samsara, there is no nirvana. Okay? So, but the skill is to have both in our daily life. Usually we have most of the time samsara. But if you have both at the same time, then that's a great life achievement. And I usually say, having all kinds of emotions in life is very, very healthy. And we need all of them. But we need to diversify and have mix of many emotions, many thoughts in our life, then negative will not affect us very much, positive will not affect us very much, because we have equalized them. It's like a mood stabilizer. So it will not affect us very much. Okay, with that, how will we do this? Our new dedication prayer, all of us together. So,
does everyone have coffee?
How about you start, please? How clear is that?
May all beings everywhere
lay thy sufferings of body and mind, obtain the ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled
with a mind weighed down by depression.
May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, may the thirsty find water, and the rich drink. May the poor find wealth, and those who deal with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome berries bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power. And may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain.
to dispel the misery of the world.
So once more, hand gestures like this, like this, and all right, thank you.
Thank you, Joshua.
Thank you very much. We do that each session now?
Whenever it's needed in this space. All right.
Thank you.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah. Great you could come. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not showing. No. I'll be around down there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Hey.